Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Murder Down the Rabbit Hole. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
College, every guy I ever knew had either a Scarface poster or a Donnie Darko poster in their room. And, okay, this can be very brave of me to say, I was not a huge fan of Donnie Darko. Were you?
Those aren't really my kind of movies, although I have seen it a couple of times. I found it very interesting and, like, compelling, but I'm not someone who really likes extremely strange movies, especially at the time, would be like, oh, because it was like 2002, 2001-ish, where it's something like, oh, I really connect to like really freaky stuff.
Yeah.
But I do remember watching it a couple of times, and it's been a long time. And I remember being like really intrigued with it, but not the weirdness of it wasn't it, but it was just kind of like trying to figure it. I think because I was like trying to figure it out.
That's what I like. I love like a mystery. I love trying to figure things out. I remember the website being kind of a mystery in its own right. It was like a promo site for Donnie Darko. And it was like trying to go to different parts of the website. It was almost like a video game. I thought that was so fun and cool. But then I would watch the movie and I'd be like, this is just kind of an abstract. And I loved like art films and weird shit. But I feel like Donnie Darko specifically was trying to be more than it really was. And it was, you know, like very macabre and whatever. But the thing about that movie is it was inspired by this real character. And we haven't talked a lot about Virginia. Virginia has a lot of crazy stuff in it. But there's this overpass in Virginia called the Colchester Overpass. And it's over a southern railway in Clifton, Virginia. And there is an urban legend that started there in the 70s and spread throughout the Washington, D.C. area. Lots of variations, and it is about a man who wears a rabbit costume a la Donnie Darko who attacks people with an axe or a hatchet, and it is known as the Bunny Man, and he lives on the Bunny Man Bridge.
That's very, like, if I knew that, I think watching the movie.
Yeah, that's might have way cooler than the movie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's also no
time
feels
travel,
like,
because time travel is a huge part of Donnie Darko.
That's
right?
True. Poor time travel.
Right.
The best time travel movie is Primer, which is also the one that I can't really wrap it. I hear Looper is good too.
Yeah, Looper is good.
I don't know. Anyway, so the Bunny Man Bridge is this. I was looking at pictures of it. It's really like a nondescript kind of like you can light it like any overpass or any bridge. You can light it to be creepy, but it's really like not. It's kind of green. It's a really short overpass, maybe 50 feet. But there's a lot of brush and area around for things to happen as they might happen. And it's this place that has become such a huge part of Virginia lore that people become obsessed with it. And I'm going to talk about that too. Anyway, the Colchester Overpass was built in 1906 near the site of Sangster Station, a Civil War era railroad station on what was once the Orange and Alexandria Railroad. It's a popular destination for people who are thrill seekers, enthusiasts, teenagers, people who smoke cigarettes, people who wear punk t-shirts.
They better not be smoking Juuls. Do not vape. Do not. It's illegal.
You heard it here first.
It's a death. You're signing your own death certificate.
Yeah, yeah. Jason Horton, cop. Exactly. So in 2003, local authorities began controlling the access to the area during Halloween because so many people were around it. In Halloween 2011, for example, just to show like the popularity increasing, over 200 people, some as far as Pennsylvania or Maryland, were turned away during a 14-hour traffic checkpoint in the area. 90 trains use the overpass each week. It's still very busy. And along with being busy around this time of year, it is filled with people who want to hear about this legend. So here's the legend of the Bunny Man. It's circulated for years in many forms. A version naming a suspect in specific location was posted to a website in the late 1990s by a Timothy C. Forbes. This version states that in 1904, an asylum near Clifton, Virginia was shut down due to a petition by the growing population of residents in Fairfax County. During the transfer of inmates to a new facility, one of the 15 transports crashed. Most, including the driver, were killed, but 10 inmates escaped. A search party found all but one of them. You gotta love like a good inmate, like culling the herd of inmates who are just running all over Virginia. During the time, locals allegedly began to find hundreds of cleanly skinned, half-eaten carcasses of rabbits hanging from trees in the nearby forest. Another search of the area was ordered, and the police located the remains of Marcus Walster, left in a similar fashion to the rabbit carcasses, hanging in a nearby tree or under a bridge overpass, the Bunny Man Bridge. Along the railroad tracks at Colchester Road, they found more evidence of his murder, clothes, etc. Officials named the last missing inmate to be Douglas J. Griffin as their suspect and called him the Bunny Man. In this version, officials finally managed to locate Griffin, but during their attempt to apprehend him in the overpass, he nearly escaped before being hit by an oncoming train where the original transport crashed. Supposedly, after the train passed, the police heard laughter. It was eventually revealed that Griffin had been institutionalized for killing his family on Easter Sunday. A lot of this stuff, the rabbit stuff, it's very apparent. It's,
yes.
For years after the Bunny Man's death, in the time approaching Halloween, carcasses are said to be found hanging from the overpass and from trees in the surrounding area. A figure was reportedly seen by pedestrians making their way through the one-lane bridge tunnel. Again, it's a very small tunnel. It doesn't take a lot to traverse it. According to a historian archivist Brian A. Conley, this version is pretty false. There's a lot of inconsistencies. There have never been an asylum in the Fairfax County area, and that the prison didn't exist until 1910. Moreover, the court records never show like a Griffin or a Walster, like anyone that might have been that guy. But the legend is real. The legend happened. There are still instances that kind of map on top of some of the general details. Brian A. Conley was extensively researching the Bunny Man legend. I checked him on LinkedIn, very respectable, very into Virginia history, went to George Mason University. He worked at the Fairfax County Archives and Library. He became obsessed with this urban legend. So here is an excerpt from his article, The Bunny Man Unmasked, Real Life or Origins of an Urban Legend. All right, he said, "Most childhood ghost stories are forgotten as one gets older. However, the Bunny Man followed me. After graduating from college, I accepted a position with the Fairfax County Public Library, eventually becoming an information specialist in the Virginia Room. One day around 1992, a very well-spoken young lady came into the Virginia Room with a question. She wanted to know how she could find information on a murder that was supposed to have taken place near her home. As I interviewed the patron to ascertain what hard facts she had to go on, some vague memory nagged at me. Two children were allegedly murdered by a local hermit for trespassing, and their bodies left hanging from a covered bridge. She had no names and only a vague idea of a time frame. The whole story seemed a little fantastic, but the thing that really bothered her was the guy was supposed to be an escaped inmate dressed in a bunny suit. At this point, even though the history had evolved a bit, I recognized this tale from my own youth. We were unable to confirm any of the elements of the story as she or I had first heard it, as I put it down in my mind, a story fabricated to scare children. I likely would have forgotten about the Bunny Man again if the questions didn't begin coming in on a regular basis. The Bunny Man had actually begun appearing in print in recent years, having been mentioned in several high school newspapers, and more recently on the internet. The various internet versions have carried the story to new heights. The most widely circulated written version, entitled The Clifton Bunny Man, and signed by Timothy C. Forbes from Virginia, was posted on a website called Castle of Spirits around 1999. This version of the tale is actually quite notable because of the number of specific facts given. Forbes claims that in 1904, inmates from an insane asylum that we mentioned before escaped while being transferred to Lorton Prison. One of the escapees, Douglas J. Griffin, murdered fellow escapee Marcus Walster and eventually became the Bunny Man. So there's another inconsistency, too, because it's like they all died but this one, but then Marcus became an inmate in the story. Not only is the location identified, but also the names of several victims and dates of their murders. The story ends with a challenge for the reader to check with the Clifton Town Library for verifications of the facts. Little effort was required to show that all of the specifics given in Forbes' version are false. First, there's never an asylum for the insane in Fairfax County. Second, Lorton Prison didn't come into existence until 1910, and even then it was the arm of the District of Columbia correction system, not Virginia's. Third, neither Griffin nor Walster appeared in the court records of Fairfax County. Lastly, there is not and has never been a Clifton Town Library. You got them with the library. The story also received wide recognition after being featured on national television. It was on the Scariest Places of Earth, broadcast on the Fox Family Channel, including a segment entitled Terror on Bunny Man's Bridge, and in the 2001 broadcast season. Even though these fictional tales of spectacular crimes are easy to dismiss as fiction, the question of the story's origin is not. Was the Bunny Man real? At first, I was content to dismiss the Bunny Man as a completely fictitious entity. However, I've learned that many legends do have some basis in factual events. At the urging of a fellow employee, I finally began a more serious search for the Bunny Man. I began with a few basic assumptions. First, although the tale is told in jurisdictions all around Washington, D.C., the bulk of them take place in Fairfax County. Second, any event that gains as much notoriety as this one must have been originally reported to the public. Third, the original event was probably criminal in nature. And he actually located two incidents of a man in a rabbit costume threatening people with an axe. So all of these things culminate in the legend of this guy. So in all real, like, indications, this urban legend is a real thing and has come from real things that we can pinpoint.
Or it's just the facts that are is up for just, you know.
Yeah, it's just like the, and again, the sensationalized, like crazy people out of an institution, like murdering. It's not like that. But there are these pointed things and these specific details, like wearing a fucking bunny outfit. It's like, yeah, okay, that matches. I don't think it's like a lot of murders happening with a guy just like all the bunny suits at the Walgreens in Fairfax, Virginia would be gone. Which I assume they're not.
It would be like kind of like the Scream masks in the mm-hmm. movie Scream. You know, yeah. Kind of like that.
Exactly. So this historian located two incidents of a man in a rabbit costume threatening people with an axe. The vandalism reports occurred a week apart in 1970 in Burke, Virginia. A week apart. Two guys in a bunny suit. The first one was the evening of October 19th, 1970, by U.S. Air Force Academy cadet Robert Bennett and his fiancée, who were visiting relatives on Guinea Road in Burke. Around midnight, while returning from a football game, they reportedly parked their car in a field on Guinea Road to visit an uncle who lived across the street from where the car was parked. Makes sense? As they sat in the front seat of the motor running, they noticed something moving outside the rear window. This is just like another like urban legend, but it's real. Moments later, the front passenger window was smashed, and there was a white-clad figure standing near the broken window. Bennett turned the car around while the man screamed at them about trespassing, including, "You're on private property, and I have your tag number." As they drove down the road, the couple discovered a hatchet on the car floor. So he had somehow, like, left the hatchet there. When the police requested a description of the man, Bennett insisted he was wearing a white suit with long bunny ears. However, Bennett's fiancée contested that their assailant did not have bunny ears in his head, but was wearing a white caperati, which, do you know what that is? It's like a tall, pointy mask hat. It's Spanish, but it looks like a Grand Wizard type
yeah,
of thing.
I think yeah.
They both remembered seeing his face clearly, but in the darkness, they couldn't determine his race. The police returned the hatchet to Bennett after examination. Bennett was required to report the incident upon his return to the Air Force Academy. And they have this hatchet mounted, too, as like a prize for whatever had occurred there. I found a clip of this testimonial. There's some creepy details uploaded on YouTube by one Wes Clark on February 11th, 2005 of the Bennett testimony. So we're going to play it for you right now. Gave you a little taste.
It was probably 10:30, 11 o'clock in the evening. We had pulled in to a field, maybe, oh, I don't know, 50 feet. There was a little entrance, like a farmer's road that pulled into the edge of this field. And we had pulled in there, and car was, you know, the car was running. We were sitting there talking, and I thought I saw a shadow or something like that move. So I locked the door, and didn't hear anything. And then all of a sudden, the passenger's window just crashed. You know, I felt something hit my foot on the floor. This guy was screaming in the window. It won't do any good to run. You're trespassing. That sort of stuff. I can't remember exactly what he said, but that was the gist of it. And so I just, car was already on. I just dropped it in reverse and hit the accelerator, spun around. He remained in the window. I mean, he was running alongside yelling. And then finally just, you know, we turned around, headed out, and gunned it and went away.
How about that?
That was okay.
Okay, you're gathering more info.
Yeah, I'm
more info is happening.
Yeah, I'm not super skeptical.
No,
on this one, there's a lot of some things are probably up for debate, but I feel like some things are seem pretty.
So we're gonna leave you to feast on that for a little bit. Yeah. Hop around that, and we'll go to break. No, you didn't like that.
Yeah, was the best you can do. Okay. Yeah.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
We're back from break.
We
did it.
We are featured on Podcast Republic's site right there. Mm-hmm. Ghost Town Podcast
right
Republic.net. Mm-hmm. Podcast Republic.net. Check it out. I want to thank them for that.
That was great.
I was on an episode of My Neighbors Are Dead. I did an episode about the movie First Blood. So check that out. My Neighbors Are Dead.
Do you have strong opinions about First Blood?
Yeah, I mean, I just went and saw the most recent Rambo movie.
Oh,
not very good. Sorry. Yeah, yes. I gotta say, yes. For the most part, not very good.
Yeah, what are we gonna do? You know,
it is very good.
What?
Patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Oh, I walked right into that.
Yeah, two bonus episodes a month. There's got to be 20 something on there right now.
Yeah, 20 at most.
Yeah, two at least. But 20 something at most.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's $2 a month. It helps us, keeps things moving along.
It keeps us going. It feeds the fire.
The pins are still on there, I guess, and people are still
smoldering fire. Yeah. The embers.
If you need a Ghost Town enamel pin, that's on there.
You need one, and you do need one.
Yeah. You don't just want one, you need it.
Yeah, you need it. You crave it. You wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, Ghost Town pin.
Yeah.
You do that.
It's right next to what your other podcast pins.
Yeah. Put them there. I don't care if you do other podcast pins.
Yeah, go ahead and do it. We don't care. We're open. Those other podcasts, they're like, oh, no, no other. You should have no other pins but me.
We're like, whatever. Do whatever you want.
Baby.
You're a free spirit.
We love you.
You do you.
Yeah.
And you lean into it.
We're very fluid when it comes to pin wearing. It's just like, whatever, baby.
As long as we're in the mix.
We like, just do it up.
Yeah.
And we're on a Halloween trajectory.
We're on a Halloween tear, I would say.
We're tearing it up. And
this is our time of the month.
As of right now, we are going to have a couple of special Halloween episodes.
Yeah, some species?
Yeah, nope. Nope. Although we had some listeners say they like the word bonies.
Yeah, how about that?
Episodes, so.
You know, sometimes I think that like I say something and Jason's like, oh dear, this is going to be the end of this podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, hey, two people liked it.
We've gotten a lot of really great feedback lately, a lot of new listeners. Not everyone's digging it.
No,
some people are. Some people
but
aren't.
But also, I love that some people are coming to us and being like, I feel like this is wrong. This is what I want you to change. You're bad. You're garbage. And I'm like, you know what? Thank you.
Yes.
Let me know.
Yeah.
Will you just let me know?
No, we take the feedback. We appreciate it. And we're thankful. And if you have a moment and you want to go rate us anywhere, but you know, go to Apple Podcast, give us a rate and review. It helps us because people see that. It's not going to do anything for us like monetarily, but you know, people see that and it helps. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, okay, this is a show. I want to at least give it a shot. So yeah. We appreciate it if you,
especially in the season. This is the season for Ghost Town.
Yeah,
our podcast truly thrives.
The only podcast out there that does anything like this at all.
We're true only groundbreakers.
Yeah, we're the only.
Don't you want to support? Do you want to be on the right side of history?
Yeah. Do you want to be the wrong? Not on this one. Not on this one. The other one, sure. Not on this one.
Oh dear.
So
my body rejected that idea. My body was just like, cough it out. All right. Do you want to get back to some Bunny Man history or what?
Yeah. It's very vivid in my mind right now. This
are you just thinking about Donnie Darko?
Here's something interesting.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Have you ever seen, there's like blogs will post terrifying photos of the Easter Bunny and kids taking pictures with the Easter Bunny like over the, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s,
it's 80s. True. I have seen
those. It's, I would say 9 times out of 10, terrifying. So I think like clowns, bunnies are inherently scary. Like a lot of oversized parts, your big teeth, big ears, your big eyes.
It's unnatural.
It's not.
Bunnies should be small, if anything. Yeah. Rabbits themselves are not even evolved. Like they like shit out things and they eat them again to get the nutrients. They're not even evolved enough to get nutrients the first time around.
You know what bunnies scare me the most?
What?
Playboy bunnies.
You're scared. You're scared?
Yeah, I'm scared. Well, I'm afraid they're going to fall in love with me, and I'm not in a position to do that.
Also, like a Playboy bunny. Yeah. Like, all the Playboy bunnies are like, how old now?
My age.
This is getting darker by the minute.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, too, my favorite Halloween thing, and I feel like I should make like a little playlist or something, is scare videos. Like videos where like people like pop out and surprise you. I love that. I love a good ghost sighting video. I love security camera footage. Mm-hmm. Oh, I could watch security camera footage all day. Anyway, tis the season. Tis the season for more Bunny Man encounters.
Yes.
Like this other one, the second one that the historian documented. So that occurred on the evening of October 29th, 1970, close to Halloween, when the construction security guard Paul Phillips approached a man standing on the porch of an unfinished home in a Kings Park West area on Guinea Road. Phillips said the man was wearing a gray, black, and white bunny costume. He was about 20 years old, 5 feet 8 inches tall, about 175 pounds. He was chopping at a porch post with a long-handled axe, saying, "You are trespassing. If you come any closer, I'll chop off your head." So that's interesting, too, that these two instances that he found are also about trespassing. So it's like, get off of the bunny man's turf and you'll be fine. Don't come to the overpass. Don't come to this side of Virginia. Just stay in your place. So the Fairfax County Police opened investigations into both incidents, but both were eventually closed for lack of evidence. In the weeks following the incidents, more than 50 people contacted the police claiming to have seen the bunny man. As it happens, you know, you get a couple things in the press. You get a lot of callers coming into town, you know, like people who are like, I want to be involved in this. That's pretty typical. Several newspapers, including the Washington Post, reported that the bunny man had eaten a man's runaway cat. The Post articles mentioned in the incident, some headlines were, "Man in bunny costume sought in Fairfax. The rabbit reappears. Bunny man scene," very simple, and "Bunny man reports are multiplying." These are all from October to November in 1970. It was bunny man frenzy. It was like the Zodiac killer, but with
less bunny cryptography.
yeah. Less cryptography, less in like a hot San Francisco summer. I think cold Fairfax autumn plus bunnies. In 1973, Patricia Johnson, a student at the University of Maryland College Park, submitted a research paper that chronicled precisely 54 variations of the two incidents. So we're getting all of this information too. But back to Brian Connolly, who says, "The aspect of the story which gets the most attention are the alleged murders. Researching historical crimes can be very difficult unless you have some basic facts to begin with. Since police records are not available for casual review and court records are indexed by the names of those involved, not by the location or type of crime, I had to begin by checking the local papers. The tool that had proved the most valuable was the Fairfax County Public Library Historical Newspaper Index, as you would. That feels very like Encyclopedia Brown style. Anyway, so there's a complete index of the Fairfax County newspaper in this library. Careful work of these two, combined with searching capabilities of a database, allows us to extract every murder and killing reported by the local press from 1872 through 1973, just in under the wire. Even though Fairfax County was a rural farming community until well into the 20th century, there were over 550 individual mentions of the killings in the study period. Eliminating run-of-the-mill domestic murders and concentrating on multiple murders and those involving children, both of which were mercifully rare, served to pare down a list of more than 500 possible events being Bunny Man murder to the following three. Number one, Francis and June Hollabur, February 1949. It would be hard to imagine a more disturbing event for a growing community like Fairfax than the gruesome murders of 37-year-old Francis Hollabur and her 8-month-old daughter, June. On Thursday, February 24th, 1949, Mrs. Hollabur and her daughter drove to Fairfax County in the company of her estranged husband, Charles. All were residents of the District of Columbia. Charles Hollabur later told police that they had come to see the new lodge at a nudist colony to which Mr. Hollabur belonged. Strange family dynamic. I don't want to judge. I don't know. Okay, I'll just continue. Upon leaving the lodge, the car became mired in some mud. The couple quarreled and Mrs. Hollabur took the child and walked away from her husband and never returned. Charles spent the night in the car and got a ride back to Washington the next day. He returned with his brother-in-law and a friend to retrieve the car. Still finding no evidence of his family, the police were finally notified. An intensive search of the area was organized involving Fairfax County Police, Washington detectives, and Boy Scouts. Get the Boy Scouts involved. No,
bring out the big
resource,
guns.
No resource. We'll say no to. At about 5 p.m., just as the searchers were about to give up for the night, one of the detectives noted that on the ground which they were standing was very soft. Oh boy. Both mother and daughter were found in a shallow grave next to the lodge in less than 200 yards from where Charles Hollabur's car had been stuck. Francis had been beaten and then shot once in the head and then once in the heart. The baby girl had been buried alive. Oof. The local community was shocked and horrified by the cold, brutal character of the crime, especially with the investigation identified Charles as the prime suspect. Hollabur later confessed to the investigators that he had planned the murder for 3 weeks and had not intended to report the disappearance of his wife, but changed his plan when the car got caught in the mud. The case came to trial on January 16, 1950. After hearing 4 days of testimony, the jury returned a verdict of guilty, and Hollabur was sentenced to die in the electric chair. His attorney filed an appeal alleging that the jury failed to give proper consideration to the plea of insanity and that the court made errors in its instruction to the jury. The Supreme Court of Virginia appeals eventually overturned the conviction and ordered a new trial. Charles Francis Hollabur was recommitted to the Western State Mental Hospital in Marion, Virginia, where he was judged to be insane. It is interesting to know that he was the first time since the Ridgway murder trial of 1927 in which a Fairfax County jury invoked the death penalty. They only do it when they think it is absolutely necessary. Interesting. So that's one that could fit into this timeline of the Bunny Man. Number two, Minnie Loretta and Catherine Ridgway, March 1927, right? We're getting back. We're going back. The availability of newspaper records made a lot of murders more just more digestible, more known to the people, but few shocked Fairfax like the ferocious and senseless attack on Mrs. Minnie Ridgway and her two young daughters. Mrs. Ridgway lived with her husband and three children on Telegraph Road in Alexandria. Sometime on the morning of March 4th, 1927, a man later identified as Louis Borsig called at the home on the pretext of seeing Mr. Ridgway. Upon finding that he was not at home, Borsig attacked and beat Minnie Ridgway into unconsciousness and then likewise bludgeoned her daughters, Loretta 7 and Catherine 5. He then stole some money and got out of town. The crime was discovered by a neighbor who heard moans coming from inside the house. All three victims were taken to Alexandria Hospital, where Loretta later died. Catherine Ridgway lived another 8 days before succumbing to her injuries. Minnie recovered and was able to identify the assailant, who was known to the Ridgways. Borsig was arrested at his home and transferred to the jail in Winchester for his safety. He was executed for the murders of Loretta and Catherine on July 7th, 1927, just 3 months after his horrific crime. So another crime that might fall into the possibility of the Bunny Man murder, or the Bunny Man legend. Eva Roy, August 1918, we're going back in time. We're heading back for one more murder, baby, one more ride. Peter Roy was a Danish immigrant who had come to Fairfax from Minnesota in 1912. In November of that year, he purchased two parcels of land near the current intersection of Old Keene Mill Road and Seidenstricker Road. Roy, a widower, became a prosperous farmer and an active member of the Lee Chapel Methodist Church. With him resided his eldest daughter, Caroline, her husband, William, and his younger daughter, Eva. On the morning of August 4th, 1918, Eva Roy, age 14, left her home near Burke at around 9 a.m. to tend to her father's small herd of cows. When Eva failed to return home that evening, her father began a search. Neighbors were soon enlisted to help, but it was some 24 hours later that her body was found tied to a tree in the woods near the old Hants house, her apron strings tight around her throat. The county coroner concluded that the girl had been brutally assaulted before being strangled to death. A coroner's jury was appointed and quickly concluded, "We, the jury, find that Eva Roy came to her death at the hands of some unknown person, and the indications point to Lou Hall as the probable perpetrator of the crime." Hall, a 33-year-old woodcutter, which was a job at that time, lived about a half a mile from the scene of the crime and was seen in the woods near the time of the girl's disappearance. The case was not to be easily solved because other suspects were soon identified and eliminated and identified and eliminated. The first, William Wooster, age 16, was soon arrested for assaulting a colored girl. He had recently been released from an insane asylum but was found that he was nowhere near the scene of Eva's murder. The next suspect to emerge was a soldier who deserted camp. The soldier, a sergeant whose papers failed to name him, was located some days later in Charlottesville, Virginia. He had scratches on his face and hands, was wearing freshly laundered clothes, and claimed to have no memory of the events between his leaving camp and his capture. They tried to interview this man, but after some weeks of investigation, determined that he was not connected to the crime whatsoever. The lagging investigation seemed to finally receive a break was the apprehension of Ben Rubin, an escaped inmate from Lorton Prison. Rubin, who had been serving a 3-year sentence for housebreaking, which again, I think is just breaking into a house, was arrested by Washington, D.C. police on September 19th for assaulting a little girl. While on the way to the police station, he confessed to Eva's murder. Rubin claimed he met Eva Roy looking after her father's cows. He asked her for food, and in a conversation with her, he told her he was an ex-convict, something you'd bring up just in casual conversation in the woods. She declared that she would turn him up, as he declared, and he became excited and choked her. The Washington authorities were unconvinced by Rubin's story and tried him for assault and theft before returning him over to the Virginia courts. An investigator sent by the Commonwealth of Virginia to interview him concluded that he was not responsible for the crime, but they filed papers anyway. On September 26th, Rubin was escorted to the scene of the crime by the sheriff. And after being unable to locate the scene of the attack or the tree where the body was left, Rubin denied killing her. He claimed the presence of the girl's father spurred him to recant his confession. Rubin's motive for confessing was revealed some weeks later when October 6th, he escaped from jail in Fairfax. He was arrested 2 days later when attempting to buy a pistol and admitted that he had concocted his story in order to be transferred to Fairfax, where he thought an escape from the jail might be easier. He was eventually convicted of burglary and escaped from the jail and was sentenced to 4 more years in prison. So Lou Hall was finally tried for murder in Fairfax County Court. The prosecution was handled by the state attorney, and the defense provided. His first trial resulted in a hung jury with 9 votes for guilty, 3 for innocent. His second trial resulted in a clear verdict of not guilty. Oof. Peter Roy died on January 22nd, 1938, and was interred in Lee Chapel Cemetery next to his youngest daughter. Her murderer was never found. After scrutinizing the 3 preceding events, it's hard because these are the things that are the most likely candidates for the Money Man. Charles Holober was caught and incarcerated. Louis Borsig was caught and executed for the murder of Eva Roy, even though many elements like were there and were not there. The last one is based on an important factor that emerged through lots of this guy's research. The Bunny Man has evolved a lot over time. The recent rash of people researching the origins of the story had been largely attracted by the spectacular nature of the crime. The previously cited Forbes version of the story features 32 victims and had a pronounced supernatural element. Again, there's a lot of people who come out, a lot of different airings or retellings of the story make it very attractive, especially around Halloween time. But it's hard to say. So those 3 murders are really the ones that fit according to this guy's research, Brian H. Conley. But we don't know. We don't know exactly where it came from. We don't know what's real and what's not real. We know that there is an element of it that is real and very much entrenched in Virginia history. But the rest, who's to say? So I want to thank, again, historian archivist Brian H. Conley, which a lot of this stuff came from, Patricia Johnson, and the myriad of people who came forward and talked about the Money Man, which we had a clip of earlier.
It's interesting that we have, this will now be our second movie reference in a row, especially in the Halloween theme. First, we had Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
And now Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for ideas, you know, I don't know if we can work more movies into every single one of them, but if we can, we will.
We'll try. We love media integration. We love interconnectedness.
Yeah. You know which one is really, it's a perfect, I mean, it's a very classic perfect Halloween movie. La La Land.
Oh.
Because there's a part where white people don't get what they want immediately.
Uh-oh.
It's very terrifying.
Did you know that there was an outbreak of the Black Plague in the 1920s near downtown LA's Union Station?
Did you know that the namesake of Griffith Observatory was involved in a Wagon-era drive-by shooting and tried to kill his wife for conspiring against him with the Pope?
Did you know that there was a podcast to tell you all this about Los Angeles history and more?
That's okay, because neither did anyone else. LA Meekly is a monthly podcast hosted by local comedians Greg Gonzalez and Daniel Zaffron as they dig deep into the shocking stories you didn't even know the city had.
Listen to LA Meekly anywhere podcasts are found.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.